This is the reason governments are printing money in massive amounts and getting 0 to 1% inflation. All they're doing is offsetting deflation. And the people have been buying gold, seeing money printing, saying, oh my God, we're going to get hyperinflation. We warned them. They don't ever listen. They're getting their ass kicked. And they're going to get their ass kicked a lot more. Gold is as big a bubble as anything we've seen in the last several years. This is my important, most important single model for the economy. And this has always been true. It's just been changed by demographics and stretched by the baby boom. You get a spring boom coming out of a depression like the 30s. 1942 to 68 in the U.S. was the Bob Hope generation. That's demographic. Demographics will predict that blue line of boom and bust. That's important. You also get a summer recession with high inflation. And this is when wars are most likely to happen. You had the Cold War, Vietnam War, all these sort of things. Because the baby boomers were entering the workforce in mass, causing inflation, while the Bob Hope generation was slowing in their spending. They called it stagflation. That's what economists called it, but they had no idea whatsoever what was causing it. No idea. Never did, still don't know. Baby boomers come along, largest generation, joined by a huge immigrant surge, and we get the greatest boom in history. From the late 80s, once I got these interviews, I said, this is not just going to be a boom, it's going to be the greatest boom in modern history, especially for the United States and Europe and the Western world. Rising spending, rising productivity, which drives inflation down. Falling interest rates, strong technologies. The technologies born in the 70s, like microcomputers and microchips and all this sort of stuff, moved mainstream in this boom. So you got high productivity from aging workers, high productivity from technologies, falling interest rates. In the fall season, you always get a bubble boom. When things get good enough, human nature is, oh my gosh, you can't lose money buying stocks, can't lose money buying real estate, and they all pile in. And then when governments lower interest rates to goose it even more, which they've been doing, you get an even bigger bubble. So fall is always followed by what? Winter. People don't like winter. Winter's tough. Everything freezes. Everything's nasty. Winter is as necessary as every season. Our Creator's not stupid. The greatest innovations happen in the difficult times, the summer stagflation and the winter freeze over. Those innovations move mainstream in the booms. We did not have downturns, we would not have innovation. What do economists want? An economy that grows at 3 to 4% forever with 1 to 2% inflation and never a recession, which means they know absolutely nothing about the dynamics of our economy. Nothing. So we're in winter, 2008 to 2023, roughly. When demographic trends are down, that's what bursts the bubbles. And when the bubbles burst, money disappears. I'll show that later. Money disappears at the speed of light. Less money chasing the same goods, deflation. So you as an investor need to understand not only the economy's going down, because they're at the limits of how much money they can print out of thin air, and cover over the biggest demographic and debt bubble downturn in history. And you have to understand the trend is going to be deflation, not inflation. Deflation changes everything. Everything goes down with inflation, including gold. It's a reset. So the next young generation has a shot at having a decent standard of living again. How many young kids can afford an apartment in London? Nobody. Now, more important, cradle to grave, end of the workforce 20, first car at 25, because the guy's not going to get married if he doesn't have a car, okay? For the baby boomers, 26, again, add about 2 years to the millennial generation. 28, average kid born, is soon after that you buy your first house, spend the most money on babysitting and childcare until they get to enter the school system and you get a break, And then people buy their largest home around age 41. Now, this is not the top of their income. That's not why they buy the large home. Why do they buy the large home? Yeah, because your kids turn into nasty little teenagers, okay? And everybody wants more space. My sister had this great home in Atlanta, Georgia. She could not sell for years, and she couldn't find a nice home, a lot, nice neighborhood. Finally found out she had the master bedroom and the kids' bedrooms on the same hall together. Nobody wants to be near, these people don't want to be near each other. They want to be as far away as possible. This is when people borrow the most. Remember I told you? Groceries, potato chips, calorie cycle, 42. So this is the rising part of the family cycle. Then you hit what? Midlife. I've always told people from the beginning, I know when the average male, at least in the United States, has a midlife crisis. All I do is pull up the motorcycle chart. Look at that. Almost all the motorcycles are bought between 45 and 49. Wouldn't that be a nice thing to know if you're buying a stock like Harley Davidson? They boomed and bust with that cycle. Totally predictable. Furniture, tires for your car. This is where people drive the most while the kids are still living with them. Vacation home. For the kids that go to college, 51 is when people spend the most money on college tuition. Wouldn't that be nice to know if you're running colleges and universities, exactly when people are going to spend the most money on you? They always underbuilt schools for the baby boomers and then always overbuilt them when they were leaving because people couldn't add a simple lag. Then it's all about entertainment. Oh, the kids are gone? Oh, we can travel, entertain, in China, dinnerware, get a pool, fix up the kitchen. And at age 58 is when I determine when the average person says, oh crap, I'm gonna die. So they buy life insurance. Do financial planning. Doctor's fees out of pocket, Peter. Hospital fees. Now travel. Travel's a great example. People travel more when their kids leave the nest and they have extra time, just like the motorcycle or a sports car or a boat or whatever. Extra time and extra money. But they only travel more internationally until age 60. Why? I know I travel a lot. Travel's stressful. Waylaid in customs and you know, Montezuma's revenge and jet lag and all this sort of stuff. So you know what they decide? Put me on a cruise ship, stuff me with food and booze, and I'm happy. So they decide. Cruise ships boom for another 10 years. So if I'm investing in travel companies, I'm going to be looking at cruise ships. If I was an auto dealer with autos about to peak right now and crash in the next several years, I would sell that auto dealership and buy an RV, recreational vehicle. Do you have those stupid things over here? Mm-hmm. People drive their homes down the street and stuff. I never got that. But all of those are bought between age 53 and 60. That's going to be a big booming industry in the next several years. Healthcare, prescription drugs. Old people don't like to do shit, so garden, lawn care. The Japanese have proven they don't even go to grocery stores. They would rather go down the road to the closest convenience store or drugstore and buy as much stuff as they can. And if you want to make a killing, nursing homes, assisted living facilities. But never enough of them, baby boomers haven't even entered that yet. Next few years. And then for decades, they're never going to have enough nursing homes. You can build nursing homes as a developer or manage them or invest in a franchise, you will make money hand over fist. Because you're going to follow the pig and the python, the baby boomers. You can also make money on things new young millennials are going to do, but there's always going to be more baby boomers with more money than millennials, at least for the coming decades. So these are the type of things, discretionary health care, things that the government doesn't cover because government's going to get squeezed. Every government has promised more health care and retirement than they can possibly afford. Mark my words on this, and we're going to have to take some pretty much of that. Only when we get to Christ. Overseas travel, health, life insurance, financial planning, recreational vehicles, cruise ships. Older people are going to want downtown homes, townhouses, condos, or farther out exurban retirement communities, not suburban McMansions. Landscaping, home maintenance services, security, convenience and drug stores, pharmaceuticals and vitamins, funeral homes. Morbid business, but they're going to boom. And nursing homes. Now, real quickly, this is going to be the topic tomorrow morning, in depth. We're going to look around the whole world. I can do what I'm doing here in the U.S., and I'll show in the U.K., any country in the world. So there shouldn't be any mysteries who's going to grow and not. Here's the developed countries all put together, peaking and actually declining for the rest of the century. Unless we have some giant baby boomer suddenly start living 20, 30 years longer. And some of those things are possible with biotech, but not yet. The other line is the emerging world. All the growth demographically is going to be in the emerging world forever, for as long as any of us live, or even our kids. Here's the UK spending wave. Actually, down the road, even better than the United States. But the point is, you're one of the groups I call sustainers. Demographics move sideways for many decades. And that may not sound so good. It's a hell of a lot better than most countries that are only point down. So you have some of the strongest demographics. Who beats you in Europe is Sweden and Norway. That's about it. France is similar to you. Everybody else has much worse demographics, and I'll show that tomorrow. But again, I'll just show this enough. This is Germany. I was looking at a curve like this in the late 80s. Once I did the U.S., I started doing it. I looked at Japan, and Japan looked like this. Actually, Japan didn't look quite this bad. This is Germany. The worst spending wave projection I have of any country in the world, especially into 2022-23. So they are not going to hold up the European Union. They're not going to bail out anybody. They're going to be bailing out themselves. And by the way, I'll also show later, Deutsche Bank is in deep shit. Their largest bank is bankrupt. And their stock is down 91% from the top and 61% just in the last year. So people saying, oh, economies are recovering. Oh, bank stocks are down 90% of the biggest banks in the world. I don't think that's a good sign. Real quickly, the gainers, six countries, all small, Australia, Israel, New Zealand, Norway, Singapore, Sweden, are the only wealthy developed countries that have an echo boom or a millennial generation substantially larger than the baby boom. The only ones. And these countries are not going to tip the world. You add them all up, they're not even 100 million people. The sustainers, Canada, Denmark, France, Switzerland, United Kingdom, United States. More sideways trend. Everybody else, including Russia, all of East Europe, all of East Asia, and Southern Europe, Germany, Austria, all decliners with little or no, in some cases, no echo boom. How do you ever grow when there's no young people to grow up and get married and buy houses and work and stuff? And then they have to support all these old people. My prediction, about 5 or 10 years, young people are just going to start shooting older people. Okay? There's just not going to be any other choice. Here's China, the only emerging country who's already peaked in their workforce growth. Emerging countries, I use workforce growth instead of the 46, 47 year lag because it's more accurate. China does nothing but decline. And everybody thinks China's going to take over the world. Well, everybody thought Japan was going to take over the world in the late 80s, and we disagreed. And now Japan's the third largest country in the world instead of the first they're projecting, and way behind and falling and dying. Japan's a dying country. Do not invest in Japan, except for nursing homes. Here's India, just in contrast, more typical of the emerging world, and the next big, large thing. This is my number one country for investing in the future if they don't shoot Modi, okay? They don't shoot that poor guy, because he's really making constructive changes for them. They just grow until the 2060s. And I'll show tomorrow, urbanization is the number one factor, more important than demographics, for looking at emerging countries and how fast they're going to grow. And there's huge differences in the degree of urbanization and how much their GDP per capita grows. Huge differences in the emerging world. Global real estate bubble. Yes, you're in a bubble. Yes, most major cities are in a bubble. Nobody thinks they're in a bubble. They're wrong. Bubbles only do one thing. They burst. And they don't burst nicely. Here's the Japan bubble. I tell people, why isn't every economist, everybody studying Japan? Japan had their baby boom coming into and just after World War II, way ahead of the United States and Europe. And what did they have? Just like that. They had a massive real estate bubble around the baby boom. They had a massive stock bubble. And what did they do? Crashed. 26 years later, Japan's stock market is still 60% off its top and 80% at worst. 25 years after real estate peak, it's still down 60% residential, 87% commercial. Still down 25, 26 years later. Real estate will never be the same because of a smaller generation following a larger one. Everybody in the baby boom generation thinks you just sit on real estate and you get rich. That is going to be wrong. Monopoly is going to be right. You buy real estate to rent it out or to save rent, not because it's going to go up for no good reason. That's over because of demographics. And again, for years, I was expecting Japan's real estate to bounce when the millennial generation, and they have a, not nearly the size of the UK or the US, but they have a substantial millennial generation, more than a lot of countries. These young people came along and housing didn't bounce at all. I'm like, what? Okay, yeah, they don't have sex. They really don't. Don't date, because the men can't afford to. They got all the crappy jobs and their parents kept all the good jobs and benefits. But that wasn't even it. I heard this thing on TV, somebody said, for the first time, adult diapers are outselling baby diapers. And that's when it clicked for me. I'm said, that's when I go, wait a minute, in real estate, when people get old, they're sellers. They either move in a nursing home or they die. They're sellers. In real estate, unlike diapers and clothes and food, most of the stuff, I even cook, lasts forever. You guys know that. You got townhouses have been here for, what, 5,000 frickin' years or something? With great plumbing. So I realized I had to subtract the dyers from the peak buyers. Normally things I'll take, just like I do the spending way, I'll take when people spend the most money on real estate, like 41 in the U.S. or 42 here in Japan, and just move that forward. No, I got to subtract the dyers. Then I get net housing demand. And in Japan, it's going to continue to fall until 2033. Here's the UK. Yours actually is better than most, but it is way overvalued now, and it's going to fall into about 2023 or 4 before it starts, demand comes up. So London Bridge is coming down. Just that simple. Every country, Australia, they really think they don't have a bubble. But they do. And here's the United States. Our net housing demand is way worse than yours. It keeps going down until 2039. So when our real estate goes down this time, it's not going to come back, just like Japan. It's not going to come back. People just don't get that. So there's going to be a lot better place to invest. And the way to make money, as I said earlier, in real estate, you buy stuff that's severely depressed and rent it out for positive cash flow because there's going to be more people wanting to rent in a bad real estate market. The millennial generation already understands something the baby boom never did. Real estate does go down. I got this from studying European history. It goes up and down like stocks if you go back to 1670 and 1800s. How we get such a bubble? Here's the classic United States. And it's, how stupid is this? The bubble started in January 2000 by my calculations, and I'll show later today my bubble model. I've got a whole new bubble model that I'm adding to the book that you'll get. Then banks would lend 3.3 times pre-tax income, 6 years later, with no substantial change in income, they were lending 9.2 times. That's how you get a housing bubble. You come in the bank, say, oh, I want to get this 2,000 square foot home, 150. The bank says, put no money down, buy a 4,000 square foot home. What the hell are you talking about? They make more money, crazy, but we get a housing bubble. Bubbles go back to where they started. The U.S. housing market, even though we crashed and you didn't, we still have at least 40-50% downside and maybe more. And I'll show London later. And, very important point, Robert Shiller, the only mainstream economist I like, he looked at U.S. home prices back to the late 1800s. He adjusted for inflation, the average size of the house, which is much bigger now. I saw my childhood house, I'm like, holy crap, we lived in that little shoebox? I thought it was a big house back then. It was just small, that's why. You adjust for that, housing does not appreciate. It only goes up with inflation and replacement costs. It's not a good long-term investment, except the degree you can rent it out and make a good income or save rent to a lower cost mortgage. But then we had this big bubble and it's burst, and it will go down farther, it'll overdo it on the downside like it did with, and then it'll come back and grow very slowly most. Gold, if you adjust for inflation, guess what you get? This goes all the way back to the 1600. Zero return. Gold is an inflation hedge, not a deflation hedge. And gold, you can't even get any damn income on. Try renting your gold out to somebody. They're going to charge you to store it because it's heavy. Huh? Yeah, banks do. Real estate has its own cycle, so everything booms at different times. Biggest boom in commercial real estate in the United States was the 1970s when the baby boomers were entering the workforce, even though mortgage rates were 16%. Only thing baby boomers are going to buy in the future, vacation retirement homes. There's two rounds of that. The second one's coming from about 2020 to 2026, and then it's over, except for nursing homes. Now, I started out, as I showed at the beginning, with demographic cycles, but I study all types of cycles. Before I had that, I had a 30-year commodity cycle, like a clock, and it has peaked. And they're not going up anytime soon, including oil and gold. But over 30 years, when something happens, in the 90s, the demographic cycles predicted that. The great boom ahead, everything in that book happened. I'll never get to be that lucky again. Because the world was simpler. We didn't have 9/11 and terrorism and civil wars everywhere and police beating up people and all this crap. So, to the generation cycle, boom and bust, which we can predict, and in the last century has been right on a 39-year clock, although that doesn't always happen, and the next one will not be. I added a geopolitical cycle, because after the first bubble burst in 2000, I said, oh, demographics are still kicking, internet's still moving mainstream, technology, hey, this boom's not over. Most people thought it was. But stock market didn't go as high as I thought it would. Even though earnings went as high, everything else happened, it's because the world changed in 2001, didn't it? 83 to 2000, what went wrong in the world? I mean, significant. We had a 100-hour war. U.S. kicked Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait and then went home and didn't try to change the regime and take over the Middle East, which they later just couldn't resist doing. 2001, 9/11, we've had what? Growing terrorism ever since. And boy, do you guys got over here. I'd be scared shitless if I were you. We got it much better than you do. How many civil wars have we had? All over the Middle East. And two big wars that both failed, Iraq and Afghanistan. The U.S. just said, hey, why don't we destabilize the Middle East and see how that works out? So we did. Stupid. To think you could unite Iraq with three whole different religious factions that absolutely hate each other. geopolitical cycle is good for 17 to 18 years and then unfavorable. What's important about this cycle, real simple, stock valuations are half at the bottom of this cycle than they are at the top. On this cycle alone, not bad economy, that adds to it. So this cycle is important, and explain to me why the second bubble from 2002 to 2007, which we fully predicted, did not go nearly as high as I thought it would. This crimped that bubble. This cycle continues to point down until early 2020 approximately, as does the demographic cycle into 2020 to 23. Third cycle, most recent, innovation. There's always innovation, but for half the cycle, they're in niche markets. They're being tried out. They're being only the rich have them, only the technology savvy, whatever. So they don't impact the mainstream. Then they move mainstream like cars did into the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And the internet from 1988 to 2010 moved mainstream. Computers, all this stuff. So every 45 years, steamships, railroads, autos, internet, just to oversimplify. When they're moving mainstream peak, it raises productivity, and then they kind of go into hibernation again, and the next big things are being innovated by anybody buying nanotechnology products recently? No. That's going to change the world. Not for a long time. Biotech is nowhere near mainstream. Robots were supposed to do all this stuff. Robots are still clumsy as hell. They're not working out as good as they thought. They will, but it's harder than they thought. 3D printing, I hear about all the time. I ain't had anything 3D printed, you know? And the most important cycle I've found since the spending wave. And I got this because I was always used a cycle called the decennial cycle from Ned Davis. And that cycle said almost all the big crashes and recessions happen in the first 3 years of every decade. And that happened in the early 60s, early 70s, early 80s, early 90s, early 2000s with the tech correction. Great cycle. Then when I published a book called The Great Crash Ahead, thinking the next one, 2010 to 12, it didn't happen. So when something doesn't happen, I say, okay, I must be missing something. I read an article in Barron's by the largest fund manager back then in the United States, Paul McCulley, PIMCO. He said, what saved me from the 2000-2002 stock crash was sunspot cycles. Now, I know about sunspot cycles because I study everything in cycles. I can tell you more about climate change than most scientists because it's just simple cycles. But it was an 11-year cycle. I'm like, I don't see anything correlating with 11 years. So I wrote it off a long time ago. I said, you know, maybe I better go back and look at this. Over the 100 years where Ned Davis did his research on stocks and found that decennial cycle, in that time frame, the cycle was 10 years, not 11. And what I found, secondly, it's not a clock-like cycle like most of these other ones. It can be anywhere from 8 to 14 years. But this is a boom-bust cycle. And 88% of the recessions, all the way back to the mid-1800s we can measure, happened in the downside of this cycle. I'm telling you, this is not a coincidence. I studied this for 6 months before I even told my subscribers about it, because I know they think I was cuckoo. Okay? Harry's finally lost it, you know? Rainfall and sunshine is 20% higher at the top of the cycle than the bottom. Think that doesn't make a difference? This thing knocks out satellites and electronic infrastructure. So the good part, I don't know how to predict whether it's going to be 8 or 14 years, but a lot of good scientists do. And the last cycle just peaked in February 2014, and the best scientists were predicting it was going to be December. That's pretty damn close in my book. So I listened to this guy. So again, price earnings ratios, valuations of stock, follow this geopolitical cycle very predictably, and big shifts every 45 years, literally. And those steamships literally peaked in 1875 in the United States and fell off a cliff when railroads came along. railroads peaked exactly in 1920 in mileage and in revenues and fell off a cliff when cars and trucks and buses came along. Automobiles finally saturated, at least in the United States, 1965, along with color TVs and a lot of other technologies. And then, of course, the internet, broadband, wireless phones, all these things have peaked. And people say, oh, well, yeah, well, there's Facebook. What is Facebook? Dancing dogs and flipping cats and shit, you know? What, I mean, it's nice. It's entertainment. Is Facebook going to change the world? You know what Google and email did to my research business? I used to have 3 full-time research assistants because I analyzed so much stuff. I got 1 part-time sharing with my partner. Email. I can write editors and all. Nobody in our company lives anywhere or not in the office. You know, they're all over the place. Email. So the next great innovations are emerging, but the next cycle in innovation comes from 2032 to 2055. And that's when we might live to be 120, and all types of stuff is going to change. But we've seen the best of the internet for now. And again, here's the graph. All the recessions back, and I looked in stock market, 88% happened in the downside of the cycle, and the other 12 were close to either the top or the bottom. And if I look at the most severe crashes, there are 11 of them, 11 out of 11. So when this cycle's down, you should be cautious in investing. And it tends to be up 6 years and down 4, so it's a narrow window usually. Here's the last two, and they're declining. The last cycle peaked in March of 2000. Anybody know what happened in March of 2000? That was the top of the NASDAQ in the internet bubble. Crashed. At the bottom of this cycle, what do we have? The GFC, the Great Financial Crisis globally, 2008 to 2009. Then we've been up ever since. I've been waiting for this bubble to burst. Now we're like, oh, wait a minute, it's not going to burst until this cycle turns on. And it's turned down. And scientists are predicting it'll bottom around late 2019, early 2020. So this geopolitical thing, terrorism, civil wars, police beating up people and all this stuff, shooting people in the back or whatever they're doing, you know, is going to continue another 3 years or so. Just expect it. And it's not good for stocks. So all 4 cycles pointing down at the same time only happened in the mid-70s, which was the largest stock crash after the Great Depression, and in the early 30s, the Great Depression. So the danger period, I'm telling you, is between now and early 2020. That's a 10 on the danger level for investments. And then for about 3 years after that, before the demographic cycles start to turn up more, you've got maybe an 8 or 9 danger level. There'll be some kind of aftershocks. But the next 3 years is when we're most likely to see the greatest crash of your lifetime. If it doesn't happen by then, I've already said it, look me up at the Gold Coast in Australia. I'm going to be driving a damn limo. Okay, I'm just going to give up and quit my profession because these cycles are powerful. And if governments are so good they can keep this good thing off another 3 years, then I'm going to say, okay, you guys don't need me. Debt bubbles are magic. Debt is created by banks. They don't borrow money or get money from investors and lend it to you. They just pledge 10% of deposits, have 10% capital requirement, and can lend 10 times their capital. They can just create as much money as they want if central bankers allow them to. Well, here's the United States. Debt, since 1983, this great boom, has grown at 2.54 times GDP for 26 years. Do you think that's a problem? Economists don't think this is a problem. Oh, we can handle it, blah, 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 blah. Any economist doesn't think this is a problem shouldn't be an economist, which means all of them. UK, 2.9 times. Your debt grew faster. So did Australia. Here's your debt by sector. Your biggest sector is financial, because London's the banking center of this side of the world. In our crisis, where we had a bigger crisis than you did in 2008-9, the most debt that deleveraged was in the financial sector, the most vulnerable, then corporate, then consumer, then government. You guys are one of the highest total debt ratios in the developed world. You're number four. Netherlands is the worst, then Japan, then Portugal, then you. And most countries have 300-some percent. In the U.S., at the top of 1929, is 180% total government debt. I am not counting unfunded entitlements here, which would more than double all these figures. We have debt bubbles, and they deleverage. End of story. It's debt deleveraging that causes deflation. Because when debt deleverages, money disappears. Oh, you wrote down this loan from $500,000 to $300,000. $200,000 just, boop, disappeared. Stocks fall 80% and don't come back for 24 years. All that money, poof, disappeared. Junk bonds go down, disappears. That's what causes deflation. That's why money printing, as much as we've had it, is not going to cause inflation like the gold bugs think. And that's why gold keeps getting that reality. And everyone says, oh, we've been deleveraging for 8 years. No. We created $55 trillion in the bubble, the last bubble. We've created another $57 trillion debt globally since that bubble burst. And more of it in the emerging world, and the emerging world is far more unstable and has far worse debt crises than the developed world does. So we're not deleveraging, we've only created more debt with all of this stimulus. And the worst thing that happened, and this is a first, ever since central banks were created, the Federal Reserve was created in 1913, and no accident that 20 years later, what did we see? A big bubble in the Great Depression. Central banks don't want us to have recessions. Central banks don't want the economies to rebalance. Central banks don't want debt to be restructured. They want to just go to heaven, okay? Get better, 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 go to heaven. That's what people want too. Doesn't work. The economy has to constantly rebalance. That's what makes capitalism work, as long as it has some reasonable regulation. Okay, so they always lower interest rates short term. They can do that at the push of a button. What they did this time was buy their own bonds and push long-term rates down to zero adjusted inflation. This is the 10-year Treasury bond in the United States adjusted for average 3-year inflation. Money is free. When money's free, what happens? Gets abused. Gets misinvested. People heard about the fracking industry. And I thought, this great wonder, we created 5-6 trillion barrels, and now we're the biggest oil producer in the world. Fracking is bullshit. It's a bubble industry. Would have never happened if junk bonds hadn't fallen from 8 to 10% down to 5 to 6, cut in half their speculative borrowing. And if global stimulus hadn't taken oil from $32 back to 115, that's when fracking went. Fracking's dead. And European banks have invested as almost much in this stuff as US banks. Fracking is going to default worse than subprime mortgages. And oil is not coming back anytime soon. Even the Saudis admit that. And they don't want to. They're smart. The Saudis, and I'll show this tomorrow in winter season, want all their competitors to fall down and die. They don't care if they're losing money. They just want all their competitors to die, especially their arch enemy who? Iran. So, another way to look at it. Global financial assets have risen to $188 trillion. Loans, bonds, and stocks. And a lot of this money is going to disappear. That's the developed world. This is the emerging world. Much larger increase. Here's my rough estimate. Add it all up. $294 trillion in financial assets. Different things. Bonds will go down less than stocks. But I'm estimating $100 to $120 trillion, it's not a typo, disappeared. Magic, now you see it, now you don't. You create money out of thin air, it can also disappear. Just as fast or faster. Okay, real quick. Bubbles. and why we never see them. That's the point of this new book. I talk about demographics, all my segments, but this book is about bubble, bubble, bubble. It looks like a bubble, walks like a bubble, quacks like a bubble. It's a bubble. Quit saying it's not a bubble. Everybody says this is not a bubble. Bubbles are 100% obvious, and I'll show later today. Entire bubble model to tell you how they work, how they grow, how they fall, and all this sort of stuff. Nobody sees them because they don't want to. When bubbles are happening, we're getting something for nothing, and people love something for nothing. And every good marketer sells you something for nothing, or at least paramount. People say this isn't a bubble. I said, well, I'll go on and say, well, you would agree that 95 to 2000 was a bubble, a tech bubble. Well, Harry, that was a bubble. Well, let's look at the Dow now, the red line, versus that bubble. Don't those kind of look similar? Except this one has lasted now 2 years longer. It's worse, and it's built on total artificial money printing, not demographic fundamentals, not technology fundamentals, and things that really drive economies. Anybody know what this is? This is the original Masters and Johnson orgasm chart. I think late 50s, early 60s. First people to study and document orgasm. What are bubbles? Financial orgasms. They're not like orgasms, they're exactly like orgasms. And what's important about orgasm, yes, they build exponentially, get more intense, but they crash much faster. This is why men don't want to talk after sex. We're done. It's over. We blew our wad. And you can't keep a bubble going forever. Nobody can keep an orgasm going forever. They're too intense. So here's the Nikkei bubble. Yep. Orgasm. So this is my new model. And people say, is this a bubble or not? I say, okay, I'll just put it on this chart. And if it fits, it's a bubble. If it's not, I'll say maybe it's not a bubble. Here's the Roaring 20s bubble in the United States. Yep. Bubble and crash and burn. Short put on. NASDAQ tech bubble. Yep. Iron ore. Now, I've been warning for years. I tell people, look, if you understand bubbles, they don't go down 30% or 50% like long-term bear markets in normal times like the 70s or something. They go down 80% plus or minus. This has already happened to commodities. We predicted the commodity bubble. 30-year cycle like a clock. This one's going to hurt. Oh, man. London real estate. So if somebody says London's not a bubble, just shoot them and put them out of their misery, okay? It's a bubble, okay? And I'll show later, you don't have as much downside as the United States and some other areas. And again, gold. Here's the Shanghai, China bubble. Just happened in a shorter period of time. 2 years up, 1 year down. Bubbles crash twice as fast as they built. And they build fast. That's why you get out a little early. Baron Rothschild, when somebody asked the richest guy in the world, whatever, the 1800s, what was the secret to his wealth, and other than manipulating everything behind the scenes, as everybody knows these rich families do, he said, I always sold a bit early. Too hard to time a bubble. Bubbles, you can drop grains of sand on the floor. It'll build a mound. It'll end up like a Hershey's Kiss. And that's when you know you got a bubble. But one grain of sand will cause an avalanche. I can't predict that grain of sand, but I can tell you when we're in this orgasm stage and we're getting close. And you better get out. What is this? The female orgasm. First one was the male. Female get a couple of kicks. If I look at the long-term bubble, here's the Dow. We're on our third little orgasm here. So this should be the last one, is what I'm saying. Three bubbles and you're done. By the way, UK fits even better. FTSE. And here's the ultimate bubble. You guys have lotteries? Stupid shit here. It's the stupidest thing you can do. Go to Las Vegas for a casino. You got much better odds, okay? 40% they take on these things. But people are people. The longer something goes up, the longer nobody won that lottery, the bigger the pot got, some point it just goes exponential. This is human nature. When people see something going up fast and normal, they can't resist it. They jump on, and they always jump on near the top, and that's why people lose the most money. The smart money gets in early, gets out. The dumb money piles in at the end. So, real quick to tie up this presentation. Here's my 12 principles of bubbles, and I've studied bubbles now as much as demographics. I've studied every bubble you can study in modern history, and they are very, very similar. There's nothing mysterious about them. First of all, first principle, and scientists understand this, technology people understand it, but most people don't. All growth and evolution of anything, human or anything, is exponential, not linear. We think linear. Again, get better, get better, get better, get better, get better. Be a good boy, follow the rules, go to heaven, stay there. That's the way we think. It's not the way the world works, at least down here. But, and this is where I argue with technologists like George Gilder, all growth is also cyclical. It goes exponential up, bubbles, and then bursts, and then go bubbles again. There's always cycles. Cycles are necessary to consolidate things and create efficiency and innovation. They're absolutely necessary. You eliminate recessions, we won't have an honest business left or any innovation. Bubbles always burst. There are no exceptions. When I make bets with media people, I say, this bubble's gonna burst, and if it doesn't in the next 4 years, I will literally bend over and kiss your ass on national TV. Because I have no chance of losing that bet. Bubbles always burst. There are no exceptions. I tell them, if there was just one where things went up, like real estate went up, and then just kind of plateaued, doesn't happen. What goes up goes down. Four, the greater the bubble, the greater the burst. This is most important in places like London and New York and Singapore and San Francisco. All the great English-speaking cities in the world have bubbled the most because they are special places. People always tell me, well, London can't go down. It's a special place. It's the special places that bubble the most and get so expensive that even affluent people in the city can't afford to live there anymore. And then they burst. Bubbles tend to go back to where they started, and I'll show you later how to determine that, or a bit lower. So it's not a mystery when it does burst. I know about how far most bubbles are going to go down, and the typical stock bubble goes down 80%, 70 to 90% range. So don't be expecting 40 or 50% when these stock bubbles burst. Real estate, 40 to 60% tends to be the range. So don't expect 10 or 20. Financial bubbles get more extreme over time because credit availability grows as our income and wealth grows. We become more creditworthy. Banks become more sophisticated. Central banks become more liberal, which is stupid. They shouldn't. Bubbles become so attractive, they eventually suck in even the skeptics. I'm the only one that ain't going to give up on this. Everybody else is cad. There's been plenty of people warning. They're like, well, no, maybe, No. They always burst. In the first big stock bubble in all of history, because stocks only started in 1607, in England with the, whatever it's called, the East India Trading Company. That was the first stock, jointly owned company. First great bubble peaked in 1720. Called the Mississippi land bubble in France and the South Seas bubble in England. Both countries were selling off national assets to pay off their war debts and financing them with cheap money. That's how you get a bubble. Low-cost land, cheap money. The French were selling swamp land for cheap. Sir Isaac Newton was considered the smartest man of his time. And he came out and said, this is baloney, this is a bubble, this is crazy, don't go for this. But guess what? His friends kept making money and he kept looking like an idiot. So guess who jumped in right at the top? Sir Isaac himself. He got his ass handed to him. So don't be one of those. Number 8, here's why people don't see bubbles, as I said before. No one wants the high and easy gains to end. So we go into denial as the bubble evolves, especially in the latter stages like now. Don't go into denial. These are bubbles. They look like bubbles, quack like bubbles, walk like bubbles, and bubbles only burst, and they burst rapidly and violently. So it's too hard to get out late. 9, major bubbles occur only once in human lifetime. When was the last major global bubble? Peaked in 1929. Anybody around then? Anybody you know around then? And if you do, they got Alzheimer's or something, okay? So we forget. Bill Clinton in the United States in 1993 repealed Glass-Steagall Act. Glass-Steagall Act, I'm not going to explain it, was designed after the Great Depression to prevent another bubble and depression, and somebody comes along later and said, what do we need this outdated law for? What did we have as soon as he repealed it? Bubble. Tech bubble. 95 to 2000. Didn't take a couple years. As soon as you allow banks to collude and do all this crazy stuff and people to speculate and borrow and market, they do it every time. We're suckers for bubbles. Bubbles tend to burst twice as fast as they build. So again, why you get out early? This is particularly true of stocks. I'll show it's not as true. Real estate and commodities take longer to burst. And commodities burst the most. 11, governments have become larger and more powerful as we have more complex urban societies. And they always find ways to expand credit like unprecedented, like quantitative easing. You've never done this before, or not to any extreme. You got a problem? Economy's down? $2 trillion? Well, let's just print $2 trillion and fill up the bucket. Does that make sense to you? Did anybody learn in life that you get something for nothing? We've been on something for nothing for 7-8 years now. Something for nothing doesn't end well. Just look at Lindsay Lohan, you know? Any spoiled rich kid, they get something for nothing. And none of them, all of them turn out to be, I'm not going to say what they turn out to be. I've known too many of them. Number 12, most important to me, my biggest argument with economists is what I've been saying today. They don't understand that what makes the economy work, what has made us rich, especially as developed countries, is the play of opposites. How do you get energy? Positive, negative poles. Try it without it. Ain't gonna happen. Two positives won't make any energy. Two negatives. Everything's about boom, bust, inflation, deflation, male, female, pain, pleasure. Without pain, all of us would be dead. People without pain go around, chop up their legs, bump on the walls. They have to live in padded cells. Pain has a reason. Pain teaches you. So does pleasure. But pain is a much better producer of innovation and learning than pleasure. Pleasure just makes you complacent. The longer you succeed any company, the more you're going to fail. So failure creates success. Success creates failure. Play of opposite. That's what makes capitalism work. But you know what really makes capitalism work? Capitalism didn't work so well until Harry met Sally. Who's Harry? Capitalism. Capitalism rewards the people who contribute the most, like nature. If you don't produce, kill it. Kill it off. Nature will kill you in a second. What is democracy? Sally. Democracy gives everybody a vote, so these 800-pound gorillas, this 1% or 0.1%, can't totally just take over countries and systems and dominate and turn everybody into sex slaves. This is what they've done all throughout history. Those two are opposites. Americans, I don't know what you guys think. Americans think democracy and capitalism are the same thing. They're not the same thing. And I'll give you a hint. I don't say this over here because I get booed. Democracy is socialism. Everybody gets a vote. You have to include everybody in the system, at least to some degree. You can't have generals without troops. Ever since capitalism and democracy got together in the late 1700s, Industrial Revolution, American Revolution, French Revolution, the world has grown unprecedented, our standard of living. So bubbles may seem fruitless, and people go, oh, how could we be so stupid? And that's what people do at the end. After ignoring them, being blind, they go, oh, how could we have been so stupid and not seen it? They are a part of the innovation process. In the fall bubble boom season, the new technologies are emerging. And basically easy finance, raising equity, IPOs, easy loans, allows tons of companies to try new business models. And guess what? And I'm an investor in new ventures. And there's only one thing new ventures do, fail. Extreme high failure rates, but the few Googles that come out change the world. Doesn't happen without bubbles. Nobody knows who's going to succeed. You've got to let all these companies and technologies try things. And then the winter season shakes it down to the ones and gives them all the market share, and then everything booms. So, later today I'm going to talk about the bubble model and how it's different for stocks, real estate, and commodities. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to look around the whole world, first at demographics, and you'll see some surprises, and most important in the emerging world, which is going to dominate the future of investing and business, urbanization, and the rate at which GDP goes up with urbanization is entirely different in different countries. So there's some real winners ahead, and there's countries that are never going to go anywhere. And I'll tell you something right now, the emerging world will never be as rich as us. At least not in our lifetime. Everybody thinks they're going to be. China's going to have big mansions and two cars. They're not. They don't now, and they won't. So a lot to learn about the world. And then tomorrow night, I'm going to go over more detailed forecasts and strategies for business and investing. Please stay around for the entire seminar. We've got great speakers. We've got Sean coming on today and Graham. These guys, we're bringing you people, something I can't do, real practical strategies for succeeding in a winter season where buy and hold and your stockbroker are dead. Buy and hold, this is the one season it doesn't work. And the trick I found, business and investment, the real secret is if there's four seasons, you have to have it.